Our text for today is the Old Testament lesson, Exodus 17, verses 1 to 7. We'll start with verse 1. By the way, this is actually a fairly important text in the Old Testament in the sense that it's referred to a number of times in the Psalms and in other texts and several times in the New Testament as well. It's an important episode in the life of the people of God in the Pentateuch. One that we've sort of lost touch with in the church today, despite the fact of its importance in the biblical view of things, and we'll perhaps touch on that a bit at the end. But let's translate first, beginning with verse 1. Vayisu'u kal adath b'nei Yisrael ma'midbar sin, and all the assembly, the assembly of the sons of Israel, they journeyed, vayisu'u, from the verb na'sa, standard word for to travel here. The whole assembly of the sons of Israel traveled from the wilderness of Sin, la'ma'asehim, by their stages, literally, in stages, sort of stage by stage. Here the text pictures them traveling and then stopping for a bit and then traveling on in another stage of the trip. Al Pnei Yahweh, here something like perhaps literally in accordance with or upon the mouth of Yahweh, here idiomatic way of saying as God commanded. Vayachnu Barefidim Va'emayim Lishtoth Ha'am. And they pitched their tent here from Chana, pretty standard verb to encamp or pitch a tent. They pitched their tent or they encamped at Refidim. And then this last phrase really introduces us to the point of what's going to follow. And there was not water to drink for the drinking of the people, literally, infinitive construct. There was not water for the drinking of the people. We would say in English, a little more colloquially, there wasn't water for the people to drink.
Is that a disjunctive
vowel? The vowel at the beginning of the phrase, la'ain ma'im, could be taken disjunctively, or it could be taken as simply an exegetical vowel, one that introduces an explanatory comment. Sort of in this case, it's not that they're at Rephidim that matters, it's that there's no water at Rephidim that matters for what's going to happen following. So one could take it either way. Personally, I'd probably think of it more as an exegetical, explanatory, while introducing a explanatory clause. In any case, that sets the situation for us. And now we move on to the main events as they start to unfold here in verse 2. Vayarev ha'am im Moshe, vayomru tenu lanu mayim vanishte. The people, ha'am, the people contended, vayarev, here from the verb reeve, which can mean to literally file a lawsuit, but here in a more general sense of to contend, to strive, to dispute, perhaps even to complain. The people disputed with Moses, and they said, "Tenu lanu mayim." Give here imperative, masculine plural from Natan. Give to us water, vanishte, so that we may drink, or with the result that we might drink. Here, this wow probably introduces a result clause. Give us water with the result that we will drink. Vayomer lahem Moshe, Moses said to them, Ma tirivun imadi, why are you contending with me? Why do you quarrel with me? Something like that. And then he goes on to say, Ma tasunun et Yahweh. And now we come to the crux of the matter. Not only are they contending with him, they are putting Yahweh to the test. Why, or literally for what reason, are you putting to the test Yahweh? Here, ta nasun, pl imperfect, second masculine plural from the verb nasa, to try or to put to test. And this word will come back into the text later as part of the place name that's given to this location. So we'll remember that verb and return to it. Verse 3, then. Vayimsa sham ha'am lamayim, and there the people thirsted, they were thirsty for water, lamayim. Vayalin ha'am al Moshe, and they grumbled, vayalin, here hithiel, from the verb loon, to grumble, to complain, gripe, something like that. And the people complained complained about Moses. You see, they were probably not complaining to him, but complained about him to one another. And that's reflected in what follows. Vayomer, and they said, Lamaze ali fanu mamitzrayim. Lamith oti v'eth banai v'eth miknai bab sama. And they said, To what end is this? You see, what is this? For what end is this? That he brought us, Alithanu, Hithiel from Allah, third hey, second person with a suffix nu. So to what this, for what reason, or maybe just why, did he bring us up, Mimitzrayim, from Egypt, Lahamith, Hithiel, infinitive from Muth, to die. And now we get to this next clause that defines who we're talking about. Othi, wa'eth bani, me and my sons, wa'eth miknai, and my cattle, miknai, bat sama, by means of thirst, here bath of instrumentality. That is, how are they going to die? They're going to die by means of thirst, sama. So why did he bring us out here, the aforementioned units, why did he bring us out here to die by thirst? And now Moses responds. Why Yitzhak Moshe El Yahweh Lemor? Moses cried out to Yahweh. He didn't respond to the people immediately and directly, but he seeks Yahweh and he says, Ma'aseh lanu hazeh od me'at l'sakaluni. What am I going to do with this people? Literally, right? What shall I do with respect to this people? What am I going to do with these people? And now we get a slightly idiomatic phrase, od ma'at. Od ma'at means something like just a little bit more. Od, still, yet, again, and ma'at, just a little bit. So something like sort of just a little more, usakaluni, and they will stone me. In other words, what am I going to do with them? You know, they're right at they're literally sort of on the verge of stoning me. Just going to take a little bit to tip them over the edge. Verse 5. Vayomer Yahweh el Moshe, and Yahweh responds or said to Moses, Avor lefne ha'am, pass by into the face of the people, pass by in front of the people, Avor, imperative, call imperative from Avar, to cross over, or to pass by in front of, in this case, not to literally go over the top of, but to go in front of, lifne, so pass by in front of the people. Wakak itka mizikne Yisrael, and take, imperative, lakak, imperative from lakak, call imperative, and take with you, here the preposition eighth meaning with, plus second person suffix, take with you, Mizkene Yisrael, men plus Zakein, elder. So take with you some of the elders of Israel. Matka Asher Hikita Bo El Haor, and also take with you your staff, Matka, your staff. Which, and now which, we get the relative phrase saying which staff, identifying the staff which you struck with it, by it, Hayor. Yor is the name in the Old Testament for the river that we know as the Nile. So it refers back a few chapters earlier when Moses takes his staff and strikes the Nile. So, he says to them, take some of the elders and take the staff with which you struck the Nile. And now the last phrase here in verse 5, kach b'yadka v'halakta, and to take it in your hand and go, v'halakta. go. So sort of repeats the idea here. Moses then does, let's see what Moses does. Hinini omeid, God hasn't finished speaking yet. Hinini omeid lefanecha sham al hatzor b'chorev. Behold me, literally, behold we'd probably just say, I am standing, note the construction, behold me with a participle. So, behold, I am standing, probably do best. Lefanecha, before you there, al hatsur. Might translate this upon the rock, or al can sometime, al, we usually in first year Hebrew learn upon as the meaning, but al really can mean sort of anywhere in the proximity of something. So it could be God is saying he's standing upon the rock, or perhaps beside the rock. But it's the next word that causes some trouble here. Al Hatzor B'Horeb, at Horeb, the name of the mountain, the alternate name of Mount Sinai. So literally, behold, I am standing before you there at or beside the rock at Horeb. And we'll come back and talk about this word in a minute, but let's go ahead and finish this verse first. Look, hikita batsur, and you will strike, hikita, a hifil perfect, while consecutive, second person, and you will strike, batsur, the rock. By the way, here's a good example of some verbs in Hebrew taking the preposition base to mark their direct object, especially verbs that involve touching or hitting, or also verbs that involve sort of emotional experiences, feeling, thinking. A lot of these verbs take base to mark their object. So here, that's what we have. You will strike the rock, and vayatsu miminu, and there will flow from it mayim, water, v'shatacham, and the people will drink, call from the third day shatam. The people will drink, end of quotation, where the Hachnach is. And now we can get the statement that Moses obeys. Vayas kein Moshe le'en ziknei Yisrael. And he did thus, Moses did thus, le'en ziknei Yisrael, before the eyes of the elders of Israel, in front of the elders of Israel. Now let me just say one thing about this word Horeb that I mentioned a moment ago. This word clearly is pointed as the place name of the mountain of God. And it's the fact that, of course, remember where this story is set. It's set at Rephidim, which is before they arrive at Horeb. So there's somewhat of a problem here in that we're told that God's going to stand before them at Horeb, we're not at Horeb yet. So this is actually what gives rise to the Jewish legend that the rock followed the people around, that we see reflected in the New Testament. This rock moves, you see. It goes with them wherever they go. And 1 Corinthians refers to this legend of the rock that followed them. But it's the fact that the text refers to it as being at Horeb that gives rise to the legend of the rock following. Since it's not at Horeb, it's at Rephidim, so therefore it must move, right? Hence the legend. Now, as much as I have respect for legends and tradition, I think there may be an alternate way of understanding the text here, and that is that this word may simply be mispointed. The verb harav means to be dry or to be desolate. And of course, the place name Horeb is a desolate place, hence the name. I think here, this probably is just slightly mispointed. It's the right consonantal text. Remember, the consonantal text isn't part of the inspired text, right? It was added 500 years after Jesus' death. And it is possible that the Masoretes got it wrong from time to time. Although, the tradition of understanding this as Horeb is very ancient, certainly. I think probably we should take this not as Horeb, but as the adjectival form, Chareb, meaning dry or desolate. In other words, I will be standing upon a dry rock, know, the contrast being the water is going to flow from this rock. So I would take it as a dry rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's problematic. Yeah, to be sure. It's not clear. It's possible that again the bathe represents a later interpretation to the text, or perhaps just a mistake in copying. There's a minor problem. The Septuagint already reads Chorev, in Chorev, so it understands this as a place name. So the tradition of understanding it that way is certainly ancient. But I'm inclined to read this alternately as upon a rock, perhaps maybe not a dry rock, but a rock in a dry place, in a Chorev, might be a way of handling the bathe. Taking it not as a proper noun, but as a common noun referring to a dry and desolate place. Yeah, right. This root Chorev is certainly used that way elsewhere in the Old Testament. It wouldn't be a unique thing to see it used that way. As I said, even the place name Horeb is really an expression of its being a dry, desolate place. So while the tradition is certainly to take this as a proper name, I'm inclined to take it as a more general term, personally. In any case, that gives rise to the tradition of the rock that followed. We'll come back to that point in a moment, but let's finish up the text in verse 7 first. Verse 7, Vayikra Shem Hamakom Massa, and he called, presumably Moses, called the name of the place Massa. Here, maim often refers to a place where something happens, and we have the root nasa, to try or to test. And so he called the name of the place testing, the testing place, and also Meriba. Meriba here from the root rav, to contend, the place of contention. Al Riv B'nai Yisrael, on account of the contention of the sons of Israel. Wa'al Nasotham et Yahweh, and on account of their trying or testing, here in infinitive construct, Nasotham from third hey verb, hence Nasoth, that oath ending for third hey infinitive constructs. On account of the trying or testing of Yahweh. And then we get sort of a summary statement. A statement that sort of summarizes or encapsulates the way in which the people tested Yahweh here. Lemor, they tested Yahweh by saying, Chayesh Yahweh Bakir Benu Va'im Ayin. Here, Yesh with an interrogative hey on the front. Is it really the case that Yahweh is in our midst, or Ayin, or not, or is he not? By the way, Ayin, we usually meet this conjunction meaning if, but there are about, the grammars and lexicons tell us, there are about half a dozen instances in the Old Testament where this word is used in a question as a disjunction. That is to say, instead of not if, but rather or. In other words, is it this or is it that? And that's what we have here. This is one of the half dozen or so places where we encounter this bit of syntax with regard to these alternate type questions. Is it this or is it that? And Eim is used in that context. So, Hayesh Yahweh, is it really the case that Yahweh is in our midst? Or I'm, or not? Or is he not? So, that's our text. Let me just say a quick word about it in terms of interpretation and preaching. I mentioned at the outset, it's a very important text in the Old Testament. Numerous times, the Psalms, Deuteronomy, other books refer back to this event, reminding Israel that they should not put God to the test as they did here when they questioned him. And the fact of their questioning Yahweh is highlighted early in the text when it says they traveled by stages as specified by the mouth of Yahweh. So when they called into question whether they were going the right way, they were not calling Moses into question or expressing general doubt about whether they're lost, but they're actually calling God's leadership into question. This text becomes in a prototype for all the instances when the people of God doubt Yahweh himself and call him, his leadership, his role into account. And ultimately this leads to this verse also in the New Testament in the book of Hebrews in chapter 3, verses 8 and 9, where again this incident becomes symbolic of the whole of Israel's mistrust of Yahweh in the Old Testament. So it's sort of this verse. Remember, this is right after, you know, think of this in terms of the unfolding story of the book of Exodus. We have in chapter 14 the crossing of the Red Sea, in chapter 15 the victory song. In chapter 16, they set out from the sea and immediately kind of begin to grumble about things right away, just the next day as they head out. And now this is sort of the next incident in the story. And it comes to represent the fact that just right after this miraculous redemption of Yahweh, already they call him into question. So it becomes the prototype for all of Israel's lack of faith throughout Israel's history. One other thing about this text we need to comment on, this maybe leads us directly to the question of preaching this text. And that's what Paul does with this in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 9, where he refers to Christ as the rock who followed. Now, this often causes troubles for interpreters. They don't know what to make of this. And I think perhaps the easiest way to understand this is to, again, see it in the context of this prototypical failure on the part of Israel to believe in Yahweh and to trust in him. So they failed to trust in him. They called him into question. But by means of the rock, he saved them. You know, he provided them with water. The rock became the locus, the instrument by which God saved even those who did not trust in him. In this sense, you know, Paul takes the rock as typological of Christ. It points forward to Christ's work, you know, the work of Christ, which fills out, or as we might say, fulfills this act. Christ becomes the thing, the means by which God saves those who do not trust in him. And so Paul connects this rock with Christ typologically. Both are God's means of saving those who don't put their trust in him. And so I think seen that way, you know, Paul's comment, which often seems peculiar to people in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 9, it makes a lot of sense when you read it in the context of the redemption history of the Old Testament itself. So, an important passage, both for Israel and for the New Testament, and an appropriate passage for leading to the preaching of the gospel, as Christ articulates it in 1 Corinthians 10, and the role of Christ as Savior of all those who fail to put their trust in him, even those who fail to put their trust in him. Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Exegetically sound that God is standing on the rock, that we should have seen that, and we see that in the Christ.